The following is an unrehearsed interview for the Kentucky Board of Commissioners by John Klee with Mr. John S. Berry Sr. John M. Berry Sr., excuse me. The interview's being conducted at Mr. Berry's law office here in Newcastle, Kentucky, in Henry County, on May 21st, I believe, 1987. Mr. Berry, could we begin just by recounting a little bit about your background, your family background, a little bit of your personal history? Your parents, for example, were they here from Henry County?
Yes.
Okay.
My grandfather, John J. Berry, came to this county after a period of service in the Army and the War of 1812. Now that's my great-grandfather.
Yes, sir.
And he bought a tract of land of 500 acres situated in the northern part of the county.
Yes, sir.
And I have information about the grant and all that was turned, but I don't imagine you want to go into that. Anyway, and my people, as the result, have always been engaged in the production of burley tobacco.
All down through that family history.
Yes, sir. My father, who was the grandson of John J. Berry, was always identified with the production of burley tobacco. And when it was proposed that a selling organization be prepared, he signed as the marketing agent.
Now this was when you were a young man.
Yes. And even before that.
I see.
I'll get going.
Oh, that's fine.
Because I didn't anticipate this.
The history questions. Yeah. The about your family. He became involved in that because there was quite a bit of agitation. The price of tobacco was low.
Well, you see, following World War I, tobacco went from $1 a pound to $1 a hundred.
Oh, gosh. I see.
And there was a serious shortage of money because they had no bargaining power.
Yes.
The tobacco farmers had no bargaining power.
They formed the early co-op.
That's right.
And of course, at that time there wasn't any legislation that protected it, so you had, I guess, some I don't know how to characterize it. Some of the farmers that were more militant try to enforce compliance?
Well, they tried to enforce a decent market,
mm-hmm.
a fair return.
Mm-hmm.
And the Burley Tobacco Growers Cooperative Association was organized in June of 1922.
Okay.
And that organization has continued down to now.
Yes, sir. Now, of course, you've been associated with that organization most of those years, too.
Well, all of them.
What were you doing? You were a young man of 22 at that time. Did you have any role in the organization?
No, not in the not officially,
mm-hmm.
The organization of the Burley Tobacco Growers Cooperative Association.
Mm-hmm.
But I joined as soon as I could.
I see.
And my father, at my instance, joined.
Uh-huh.
And we had a comparatively successful experience.
Let me ask you, you were raised and educated here in the area?
Yes, sir.
And what about college? Did you?
I went to Georgetown College in 1922.
I see. Uh-huh.
And I finished, I went to Georgetown College in 1918.
And graduated, huh?
And I finished there in June of 1922.
Mm-hmm.
I came home because I had planned to be a farmer.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
And I hopefully thought that perhaps something would happen.
Mm-hmm.
To bring about a fair and competitive price for Burley tobacco.
Now, at that time, of course, most of these farming operations in this area, I guess, were diversified. You did other, farm did a lot of different things.
Yes, sir, but the chief source of income was Burley tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we had, as a part of the program for Burley tobacco, we had livestock,
mm-hmm.
of all kinds that were permitted in this area or they had been used,
yes,
in this area.
Mm-hmm.
Cattle, hogs, sheep, mules.
But you saw most farmers, that Burley crop was their major crop.
Oh, no question about it.
And of course, they couldn't plan from year to year what kinds of income.
They didn't know, and so this organization was formed.
Did Father not think it was a good idea for you to come back and be a farmer after going to college?
Well, he didn't encourage me. I was just completely satisfied. I was completely satisfied with our part in the production of Burley tobacco,
mm-hmm.
as well as general farming.
Yes, sir. So what happened then? Did you go into farming then?
Yes, I did. In 1922, when I finished Georgetown, I came home, mm-hmm. and started farming.
Yes, sir.
It didn't last long, though, because the prices of tobacco were dreadfully low,
mm-hmm.
and
did you return to school at that time then? Did you continue schooling or?
No,
uh-huh.
No, I didn't. But when I, in 1924,
yes, sir.
Virgil Chapman was a candidate for Congress,
uh-huh.
and he heard me one day speak at Port Royal, Kentucky,
yes.
and he wrote me a letter after that. I didn't meet him that day,
uh-huh.
but he wrote me a letter that he was a candidate for Congress and that he wanted me to go with him to Washington as his secretary. I replied that I would be interested in his proposal only if I would have the opportunity to go to school.
Yes, sir.
To law school. He, of course, was the greatest champion of burley tobacco that ever came.
Do you remember what the occasion was, that why you were speaking? Was it related to tobacco at that time?
Yes, it was a tobacco meeting.
Was it?
And that was, I had acquired something of a reputation.
Yes, sir.
As a tobacco advocate.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote him back when he wrote me that I would be interested in going to Washington with him as his secretary only if I had the opportunity to go to law school. And in response to that position,
mm-hmm.
he said he wrote me to meet him in Frankfurt, and I went immediately to meet him.
Mm-hmm.
He was from Paris, and his father-in-law, he was a member of the law firm of Franklin, Talbert, and Chapman.
Yes, sir.
And that I saw the possibility
mm-hmm.
of developing a connection there.
Yes, sir.
When I finished law school, but I did not have success in that respect. When I had finished the law school.
Now, he did, obviously, he did get elected then, and you went to Washington.
Yes, he did get elected that year. I traveled the county here.
Campaigning for him.
Campaigning for him.
What, do you remember what year this was?
That was in 1924.
I see. So you were in law school in Washington. Where at there in Washington?
George Washington University.
George Washington.
And I finished there and took the bar examination in the spring of 1927.
How was it working for a congressman in Washington in the 1920s?
Well, it was, you didn't get the pay. I got $2,000 a year is all I received, and because that was all that he had
mm-hmm.
to give me.
Yes, sir.
And of course, the secretaries or the executive assistants, as they have some doctored title since, they get $40,000 or $50,000 a year.
Oh yeah, today. Could you make some valuable connections there? Or
no, I did not. Uh-huh. I simply was I had my hands full.
Yeah, sure. Going to school.
Going to school. I went to school at 5:10 in the afternoon and stayed until 7:10.
Yes, sir.
And that was, I had law classes. I went to Frankfurt, came home to Frankfurt when they announced the examination for admission to the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And I took that examination, made the highest grade of any. There was about 65 of us who
See.
Took it, and I made the highest grade of any of the participants at that time.
Now, did you say this was in the spring of 1927?
That was in the spring of 1927.
Mm-hmm.
I went back to Washington, finished my academic year
yes, sir.
at George Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Came home, I had announced to Mr. Chapman that I had passed the bar examination and that I was no longer interested in staying in Washington.
Yes, sir.
Then I wanted to come back, and the fact of the business is I wrote my father that I was coming back to Newcastle to practice law. And it didn't matter a damn to me whether I made $1,000 or $1,500 a year. I would be much happier here making that amount. And if I had to fuss with him every day. So that was the beginning.
So you came back to Newcastle
in the spring of the early summer of 1927.
So was there a firm here you were able to go in with? You just hung out your own shingle?
I hung out my own shingle.
Uh-huh.
And started to work.
Your personal life at that time, were you married at the time?
No. Uh-huh. I didn't marry for many years after that.
I see. Okay.
But
I want to bring that in when we get to that in the chronology. Let me ask you about the Burley Co-op. One of the reasons that you left the area was farming was, I guess, such a depressed thing at that time. Unlike, I guess, the rest of the country, the 20s were pretty successful for, I guess, everybody else but the farmer.
Well, because of the low price of tobacco,
mm-hmm.
and that was remedial. There's no question about that. We could have had you. The only trouble about it now is
mm-hmm.
that the damn manufacturers are calling the shots.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. And but I've opposed them strenuously for the years that I have been in the business.
Mm-hmm. Well, wasn't it a similar situation then in the 1920s? There wasn't enough competition among the buyers?
Well,
overproduction, I guess.
Well, in other words, when a man pitched a crop,
yes, sir,
he plowed so many acres of ground as in relation to what he had done the year before.
Yes, sir.
And he increased his production
mm-hmm.
Year after year, hopeful that it would bring a decent price. The first time that I ever remember of waking up in the black of midnight was when he was to meet Mr. Will Bishop
mm-hmm.
at the end of Bishop Lane.
Mm-hmm.
And they were to go horseback to Worthville,
yes, sir,
in Carroll County, where they were to catch or could catch a 4 o'clock train
mm-hmm.
that would carry them to Louisville and in plenty of time to attend the market.
Mm-hmm.
They had shipped their tobacco down there,
yes, sir,
and it was the old Hogshead Market,
mm-hmm.
and I remember distinctly that when he had that opportunity, when he had raised a crop of tobacco, that he had shipped it to Louisville. And as we sat around the old family fire the night before, we were speculating about what he would get and so on, what kind of price. And he received a dirty low price. And that's made an impression upon me. And I resolved that if I could ever have the opportunity, I would do what I could in behalf of tobacco.
Now that old Hogshead Market, that was an auction market too, but people
yes.
shipped to Louisville and the buyers came there. And
that's right, uh-huh. they came there. And uh,
the 1920s, they had begun the warehousing, the warehouse market.
Oh, yes, and before that.
Yes, sir.
They had started a loose leaf auction warehouse at Bowling, not Bowling Green,
I know we had some early ones in Maysville.
Well, I know you did.
Uh-huh.
I know you did, but you didn't.
Yes, the first one.
Uh-huh. The first one was at Glasgow.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And as I recall, mm-hmm.
Well, I can find that.
Yes, I think that's right. I think they started about 1907 or 8.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think it's right.
Anyway,
thinking about those, was that an annual thing that your father did? I mean, that's the way they sold the tobacco.
That's the way they sold the tobacco.
Uh-huh.
If unless somebody came in and barn by it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there was a fellow by the name of Henderson,
mm-hmm.
who opened a tobacco buying firm at Port Royal in this county.
Yes, sir.
And he employed an uncle of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And that was along 1910 or 11.
Yes, sir.
And he bought and speculated on tobacco. And there wasn't much prospect.
Right.
But well, anyway,
those kind of people that would go out to the barn, sometimes called pinhookers.
Well, not necessarily pinhookers, but pinhookers is a term that's derived from the auction market.
Yes, sir. Uh-huh.
And I suppose that you really could call him a pinhooker.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he was at least the most innocent form would call him a tobacco buyer.
I see. In other words, he wasn't. Had the best interest of farmers at heart.
Well, he was supposed to be, but that can never be when the dollar's involved.
Yeah, I understand. Right,
you know.
Right, because he was trying to make as many dollars as he should.
Of course he was, mm-hmm. And he had hired an uncle of mine who was supposed to be somewhat proficient in tobacco,
mm-hmm.
And so on. But anyway,
of course, that uncle, I guess, he was out to try to get more people to sell with Mr. Henderson,
bring the tobacco to Henderson at Port Royal.
Uh-huh.
And they would process it there, such processing as might be necessary.
Yes.
To change the grades or improve the lot of tobacco that they had.
Mm-hmm.
And
let me take you back to that. Back to your early law practice. You came back here and you opened up your law office.
In July the 5th, 1927.
Mm-hmm. Did, I guess people weren't beating down your door?
No,
business?
But I had a considerable practice.
Good.
In the first year.
Is that right?
I remember going to Georgia, a committee of people came here to see me.
Yes, sir.
About coming to Georgetown,
mm-hmm.
and taking over the practice of Judge Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
And I considered it and thought about it, a lot about it, but I declined it,
mm-hmm.
because I had been to see Church Ford, who was a practicing lawyer there and became a federal judge, district judge. And I told him of what my experience had been. I had made about $3,500 the first year.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, John, don't you come to Georgetown, because if you are making that much money. Mm-hmm. In other words, times were hard.
Yes, sir.
Didn't matter damn what your talents were, that you didn't get paid for them.
Yes, sir.
And I came back home and communicated with John Montgomery, Mr. John Montgomery, and Mr. I haven't thought of his name,
mm-hmm.
But I think he's Mr. Offutt,
mm-hmm.
OFFUTT, and I told him that I would not be open for consideration any longer.
Mm-hmm.
So I lost that, and it was a perfect location for a fellow that wanted to practice law.
Mm-hmm.
But I came here and I worked every aspect of the possible aspect of it.
You were doing all kinds of law work.
Anything, mm-hmm. No specialization.
Uh-huh.
I saw something about that yesterday. But anyway, you did what you could.
Yes, sir.
And you were far from a specialist,
mm-hmm.
in law, and the law covers everything.
Sure. You started practice, and almost immediately the country went into a countrywide depression a couple years later.
Well, sure I did.
How did that impact people out in this area?
Well, people were desperate.
Mm-hmm.
They had no means,
mm-hmm.
no money. And I would write a deed for $2.50, 25 now is the minimum charge.
Mm-hmm.
And I was favored,
mm-hmm.
by a lot of the people here, and I got nominal employment in that respect.
Mm-hmm. This is tape number 2 with John M. Berry, Sr. of Newcastle for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. We were talking about the motivation, which you said was from just helping the farmer as much as you could.
I didn't get a penny out of it,
mm-hmm.
but I was quite willing.
Mm-hmm.
And I had developed a reputation of wanting to do something about it.
Yes, sir.
And for example, one day I was planting corn,
mm-hmm.
with a 2-horse planter and 2-mule team planter.
Uh-huh.
And I saw the mail carrier coming,
yes.
down the road,
mm-hmm.
and I decided that I would drive him out to the end and hitch him to a fence post and go get the mail.
Uh-huh.
And lo and behold, there was an invitation in it from a fellow by the name of Green,
mm-hmm.
down at English in Carroll County.
Uh-huh.
And he had known and gone and run around with my father and all. And I accepted,
mm-hmm.
his invitation to come and talk tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
And that petered out,
mm-hmm.
as everything else did.
Seemed to, uh-huh.
Yes.
You didn't tell me that while you were you still doing a little farming while you were in your law practice or overseeing some farmland?
Well, I had, my father had, 400 acres,
mm-hmm.
that he had made and accumulated.
Mm-hmm.
And, but there wasn't a God's thing to do.
Yeah, I see.
In this country,
mm-hmm.
not a thing.
Now, you said in this that what had happened is that some of the farmers that hadn't, that were members of the co-op, thought they were making things better for those that weren't members.
And they refused to sign. I wanted to continue
right.
that. At these meetings, I would talk, and now's the time, and we've got to do something else. The contract is going to expire, and you'll
yes,
be
sir.
Free
mm-hmm.
to do as you please. And that would please a lot of people, of course. And there was no chance of getting people to sign or to renew
mm-hmm.
their membership in the Burley Association. And so it went from that condition on till 1939.
Yes, sir. Now, what happened in 1939?
That's when there was agitation
mm-hmm.
for a marketing arrangement that would improve the rights. But it didn't, that didn't, in other words, nothing came of it
mm-hmm.
at that time.
Yes, sir.
But then when they got the contract for growers to sign, who, because of one foolish reason or another, refused to do,
mm-hmm.
then there came along the Roosevelt era,
mm-hmm.
in which there were more Christian concepts provided for the average citizen.
Yes, sir.
Than any than had been proposed by anybody,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and they got the AAA Act.
Yes, sir.
That embraced everybody, whether you wanted to be included or not,
mm-hmm.
you were included.
Yes, sir.
And so the organization had a faithful membership,
mm-hmm.
or it had. I'm getting ahead of my story.
Mm-hmm. That first AAA Act, I think, was in 1933.
Well, that's true, and uh-huh. that was declared unconstitutional.
Yes, sir.
And then they came along with some slight changes
right.
and made it constitutional.
Mm-hmm.
And then they organized and went for the AAA Act. Sorry. And they enacted the parity loan statute and all.
Mm-hmm. Now, we haven't talked about what you were doing in this interim period. Did you have any?
I was practicing law.
Yes, uh-huh.
As hard as I could. It was
because it was the Depression.
It was 14 or 15 years
mm-hmm.
that period was, and I was beginning to get my foot on the ground
mm-hmm.
and get something done.
Did you have any official capacity with the co-op through that time period?
None in the world but membership.
You're just a member.
Uh-huh. Just a member.
And probably knew a lot of the individuals involved
well,
since you
did. Of course
been
I did.
Uh-huh.
But.
Was it after this second, this 1939 act, where the farmers, I mean, they were pulled into the program by force with by the government, or?
By the enactment of a law.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That said, if you produce tobacco and market tobacco, this is how you'll do it.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. As time went on, from January 1940, I swear that I can't.
Mm-hmm. Oh well, those dates aren't that central because I can find them. I just want your recollections, but.
Well, we
mm-hmm.
we used our influence, everybody,
mm-hmm.
to increase the. Sign-ups for people.
I see.
And who would go to the ASC offices and
mm-hmm.
find out the malcontents.
Yeah.
And then they would proceed to operate an influence on them.
So you actually went out and talked to farmers saying, you know, this is a good program, you ought to participate?
Well, I did, but and it proved out to be.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
No question about it, until we got a bunch of damn Republicans up there that
tinkered with the
that would have let it gone by.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't. They believed that first thing that I've complained about over the years, and my files will show it.
Yes, sir.
That the powers of recall have left. Mm-hmm. I had a light stroke.
Uh-huh. Yes, sir. I understand.
Well, I did have it. And,
you were talking about the one of the criticisms the Republicans had. Did it have to do with production and supply, or?
It was a regulation. Too much government.
I see.
That's all their carte blanche. Carte blanche criticism
mm-hmm.
of all the New Deal measures.
You're right.
But yeah. My God Almighty, people would have suffered bankruptcy.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
And lost everything they had.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it could have been revised
mm-hmm.
So as to continue on indefinitely, because
yes,
we, and I'll get to that
uh-huh.
if you want me to.
Yes, sir. Yeah, we'll get up to there. And what you're referring to is this almost complete change in the program with throwing a lot of it back to the farmers, and as far as cost and.
Yes, mm-hmm. they criticized every aspect of cooperative marketing.
Yes, sir.
Yet cooperative marketing wasn't a single thing in the world, mm-hmm. but the selection of somebody and some organization mm-hmm. to market and handle their tobacco.
And of course, it had gone on for 40 years successfully.
Well,
co-op effort.
Well, yes. Mm-hmm. We've gone on. I drove to Lexington every Wednesday
mm-hmm.
for 50 years.
Is that right? Well, that takes us. When did that start? Was that in 1940 or?
That was about 1940.
Uh-huh. That you started being the attorney for the co-op?
No, not uh-huh. a damn thing in the world, but a half-hungry country lawyer. And of course, a lot of them thought, and I've seen the manifestations of that attitude toward me as an attorney,
mm-hmm.
that they thought I was a rabbit-eating, briar-jumping son of a bitch from down in Henry County, and
uh-huh.
he won't provide anything for you.
Uh-huh.
But I've had a marked success.
Mm-hmm.
One year we tried cases in 21 counties of Kentucky
mm-hmm.
to show you what the extent of our influence and the extent of our patronage was.
Now, what were those cases in reference to?
Anything.
Mm-hmm.
Cow getting out, getting killed, destroying somebody's crop.
Yeah.
Or, you know.
Yeah. Talking about the firm's business then.
Yes.
Expanded to that point.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, this program really then, what you're saying, really went into effect pretty strongly in 1940. And of course,
that's when the agitation, and I want to look.
Here, I'll get that.
No, wait just a minute.
Look up some of that, some of those specifics.
We entered the market with loans
were specified, and loans to growers.
Yes, sir.
They could reject, of course, and a lot of them did for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But they saw that that it was a good thing. But
yes,
anyway, my recollection is that we started in January 1941.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, of course, we pretty soon, the tobacco business, I guess, picked up because cigarette smoking had gotten very popular.
Yes.
And of course, you had the war in Europe.
Yes.
And I guess there was a demand for cigarettes.
That's right.
From that source.
And but it turned out that the loan rate as an advance to the grower,
oh, okay,
was in excess of the market,
oh, okay,
to the grower.
Mm-hmm.
And we proposed at that time, I never shall forget it, and I was talking to the assistant dean at the College of Agriculture who was there.
Uh-huh.
And he said, I remember what you proposed, mm-hmm, that the loan rate on different grades of tobacco be restudied and reduced because the loan rate was the equivalent of the market,
mm-hmm,
and it should have been, but I tried to every way that I could to get Bill Lanier, who was head of the tobacco division in the Department of Agriculture,
mm-hmm,
to come around and let us have a meeting dealing with the high price support,
low price, uh-huh,
our loan rate.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a, well, he didn't accede,
uh-huh,
to a single thing that I suggested.
I
in fact, the business, I couldn't even see him.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Washington on a tax matter sometime before. After the program was going on and being successful,
mm-hmm,
and I went to try to see him,
mm-hmm,
and his secretary reported to me that he was in town, but that he had gone to, mm-hmm, this office or that office or something else.
Uh-huh.
So I followed him and tried to find him,
mm-hmm,
but I never was able to
successfully
contact him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a rather arrogant fellow.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, failing to contact him personally, I went back to his office and asked his secretary to give me a pencil and paper. And I wrote him a note.
Mm-hmm.
Bill, dear Bill, the price support for burley tobacco has reached an unreasonable height.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to do something to reduce the loan rate. I never heard a cheep out of him.
Mm-hmm.
Yet he was supposed to be a devotee of the tobacco program.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so sold on it,
yeah,
and as I am now, that it can be adopted and bent to conform to
the conditions
for any crop,
yes,
for any farm produce.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be, but they wanted to get votes.
I see.
And they,
that's why they kept the price up.
They wouldn't consider lowering the price. Here was an organization that was promoting the act because we had known of its success.
Mm-hmm.
We had, as we had administered it in Kentucky, it was eminently successful.
Mm-hmm.
And
you didn't want to see this program go by the wayside the way so many other things had happened.
Oh, that was the crime of the ages.
Mm-hmm.
they've now enacted, and we had them a representative up there in the person of Forgy.
Mm-hmm.
We hired him. I found out about him, and I thought it wasn't anything to do but to play politics as much as you can.
Yes, sir.
So I found out about him, and I contacted him, and he was available to us.
Yes, sir.
Running for the United States Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the features of his campaign, was that he's now, I don't know whether you know Lawrence Foggy or not, but
yes,
he's a fine boy,
uh-huh,
and I'm devoted to him and all that, but, well, he's shy. he doesn't have perspective.
Yeah. Well, you know, certainly not like not having seen how desperate farmers were at one point without this program, as in your case.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I had known its history forever.
Yeah. I want to get into your, you said your relationship with the co-op. You were, what? How did that become more?
Mr. Jones of North Middletown.
Uh-huh.
John W. Jones,
uh-huh,
who was a saintly fella.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Frank C. Taylor came to see me one afternoon, or one Sunday afternoon,
mm-hmm,
after the program had been installed.
Yes, sir.
And they wanted me to become a member of the directorate,
mm-hmm,
and a member of and I acquiesced in it.
Mm-hmm.
They were right, and I was elected by, then vacancies on the board were filled or supplied by action of the board until the regular election would come around.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've been in and out of it so miserably.
Uh-huh.
And then they gave me $1,500 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what Tom Forsey at Owenton was getting.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted me to come into the organization to be the countervailing influence to Tom Forsey.
I see.
And, mm-hmm, well, anyway, I've had lots of experiences and disappointments.
Were there rivalries between the two attorneys then, or?
No, Tom Forsey was a banker.
Oh, okay, I see. All right.
And
they just wanted you on the board to kind of balance.
They thought that would be a strategic move. And sure enough, it came about. And I was elected vice president of the Burley Association.
Mm-hmm.
And I never shall forget Mr. John Jones. I was presenting a thing to the board of directors one day,
mm-hmm,
and he said at my conclusion, said, "John's my man,"
mm-hmm,
which was in the endorsement of me as coming to be president of the association.
Mm-hmm.
So
he was a proponent of you on the board.
Oh, very, very much so, and so was Mr. Frank Taylor, who was the best informed tobacco man that I ever encountered,
mm-hmm,
in all the years I've been identified with it.
Mm-hmm.
But Frank C. Taylor knew, he had studied his lesson.
Yes, sir.
And there's a lot to cooperative marketing.
Yes, sir.
There's a lot to the production of a crop out here on a Kentucky, Henry County hillside, that he can't take care of himself.
Yes, sir.
He's not of sufficient stature to do anything. And here we provided him with,
mm-hmm,
provided him with the mechanism,
right,
by which He could make a living, and that he would have bargaining power.
Yes, sir.
And here, you don't, without it, you don't have it.
Oh, yes, that's right.
You know the story that it's frequently repeated, how 7 or 8 dealers or manufacturers, and maybe a dealer, but how the four would, the market would sink one day, and they'd come out the next day with a price for B4F, and they'd ever one pay that
same price.
Mm-hmm. And here we came into the picture, and we had available to us all the expertise that we could wish for.
Yes, sir.
And we studied our lessons, and I for years, as president of the Burley Association, I've said to them, study your lesson. Mm-hmm. Acquaint yourself with what there is to be known, and then use your cards to your best advantage.
Sure. When this program was initiated, there's legislation in the 1930s, and then you said it really came to fruit with the whole system being in place in 1941. Did people in Washington come back to Kentucky and talk to people about setting up the program or to find it?
Well, we had contacts up there, and they were well-informed men, too, and dedicated people.
I was going to ask you, what you mentioned, that this Mr. Chapman that you worked for earlier, was he in Congress at the time?
Or? Yes, throughout the whole time.
Yeah. So he had some input into it, I guess, through the
Department
of Agriculture.
Well, of course he did. And they would heed us.
Mm-hmm.
Here, this damn thing that they've got now is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. They've gone around, clear around the barn, and come up with something that doesn't apply.
Mm-hmm.
All we needed to do was to lower the loan rate and stop the flow of tobacco under loan into our custody.
Mm-hmm.
And we proposed it.
Yes, sir.
And I tried manfully to contact Bill Lanier, and because he was the spokesman for tobacco, for example. He came from Georgia.
Yeah.
I think he's got a brother down there that is a veterinarian.
Mm-hmm.
And I never did confirm that, but anyway. For example, we had a problem, a serious problem, and we sent for him to come down to a meeting at the Springs Motel.
Yes.
One night, and he appeared, and he had this comment, and it's stuck in my craw ever since. Mr. Berry thinks he knows. Yet it was what I wanted. It was right.
Yes, sir.
But he said, I'm damn sure I know. And he didn't, I'm referring to that recently to Beckley, if Beckley remembered it over there.
Uh-huh.
And he did remember it.
Yeah.
But we knew, and the association kept abreast of the supply situation, and we didn't hesitate to take a cut, or recommend a cut. Now, the warehouse people would always come to the conferences and advocating an increase, because they wanted
a percentage.
Yeah.
Yeah, for them.
That's right.
And now, that short-range problem you talked about where the price support was too high in the 40s, did it work itself out then?
No, it did not. It continued on and got us in trouble. And a lot of those fellows up there, now if you can go back to the Jim Thigpens and the others up there who were Simon Pure tobacco advocates, had come out of the North Carolina woods down there realizing the necessity of a high price or a fair price
yes,
of tobacco. And I once was riding on a train with Jim Thigpen, and mm-hmm. Jim made the remark that we owe, it's true, we owe a great amount on burley tobacco, but we owe it to ourselves, mm-hmm. which in a way wouldn't hold water defensively mm-hmm. if you were trying to suggest and maintain a high level of protection
yes.
for the grower. But Jim and Frank Ellis and all, so many of them.
Mm-hmm. Now, through these, since from 1940 really up until the present, you've served in various capacities with the co-op as president of the association.
I was president of it until I was 75 years old, mm-hmm. and I declined to be right. reelected. Mm-hmm. And then I continued on as attorney for the association during this critical time.
Yes.
And we thought maybe maybe something would occur. Mm-hmm. We were desperate as far as that's concerned. Mm-hmm. And any program protective of the price rights of the grower mm-hmm. was welcome.
Yes, sir. This is the second part of tape two of an interview with Mr. John Berry. I want to maybe go decade by decade and talk about some of the challenges and some of the things that happened with your association with the co-op. In the 1940s, we had the war years and I guess a demand for cigarettes. Was business pretty good for the cooperative?
Yes, it was. We jumped in with sizable supplies, you see.
I see.
And we had some bargaining power for our members.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking here a minute ago,
mm-hmm.
And I tried to find a membership contract
uh-huh.
by which the signer, the person, mm-hmm. you were interviewing at the time,
uh-huh.
would be able to say what he was willing to do and contract with the Burley Association to do it.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And the Burley Association has simply stepped in his shoes
mm-hmm.
by contract.
Yes, sir.
And it's the greatest thing it ever mm-hmm. was.
Let me ask you about Somebody might be listening to this tape someday that doesn't really know what the co-op does. The government, it's really a non, it's supported through the commodity laws, but it's an independent group.
It is. We did not sacrifice anything to government.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on what the loan rate is, a farmer, the co-op will take the tobacco into its possession.
That's right.
And then deal with, they will deal with these buyers, these companies, when the market goes up.
Well,
or when there's a demand for the tobacco.
Yes. The last 3 or 4 years, the crops that we have received, we got, I talked to Beckley yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
We only got $33 million out of the 86 crop.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And but over the years, the proof of the pudding is in the benefits that come from organization.
Mm-hmm.
we, over the years, took tobacco that nobody wanted on the market.
Yes, sir.
We took it and processed it and aged it and so on.
Stored, uh-huh.
And in all of the time, since January 1941, mm-hmm. we have collected and distributed to growers $32 million.
Mm-hmm. You know, people don't realize, I mean, they, and people that don't know tobacco, over the, we're talking about a 40-year period here, and they criticize and say, well, the government's, it's cost the government money, but in fact, it hasn't cost the government really anything.
No, not a dime. Mm-hmm. Now, because of the lack of revision of the loan rate, mm-hmm. which we foresaw,
yes,
and I proposed to Bill Lanier mm-hmm. In a meeting that we were having down at tennis, where we go to have our meetings down at the, well,
that, not Knowlesboro.
No.
You mean?
It would be the Burley and Darkleaf banquets.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's where new ideas by the conflicting interest groups can be worked out.
I see. Uh-huh.
In other words, if the loan rate is too high, mm-hmm. then it ought to be, no question about it, it ought to be lowered.
Mm-hmm.
And I proposed there that day that we were in a meeting and Bill Lanier was addressing.
Mm-hmm.
And he then asked for questions. I said, what do you think about the loan rate? I think it's too high and it's going to wind us up.
Mm-hmm.
And the arrogant type that he was,
mm-hmm.
he didn't warm to the idea at all.
Yeah. But just to repeat, it's only been the last, say, 5 years that there's been a different situation. Throughout the history of the program, you all were able to market the tobacco that was taken in.
That's right, mm-hmm. to the tune of $32 million in profits.
Yeah, those are actually refunds back to farmers.
They
had gotten paid,
yes, sir,
first, but now, you know, when you all sold it, they're able to.
They'll get, in other words, we have a contract with the warehouse by which they will pay for the tobacco as it, including our advances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, those are essentially advances, and then you pay back the commodity.
Commodity Credit Corporation has the custody of the crop.
I see. Okay.
And
so once they get repaid, anything left over, you all redistribute it.
Sure.
Back to the farmers. Uh-huh.
That's right.
So, in your own judgment, and I have some opinions about this too, but in that 40-year period, what has this support price and this program meant to an average Henry County farmer, or Bourbon County farmer, or any of these Burley farmers?
My God, there's no way to estimate mm-hmm. what it's worth mm-hmm. and has been worth. But in the first place, they had no bargaining power.
Yes, sir.
They went to the market and supinely accepted whatever a disinterested buyer or an uncharitable buyer would give.
Like your father had to do in Louisville many years before.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And I resolved that night that mm-hmm. we sat around the fire. He was very hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
And I resolved, by God, that I would fill in the gap if I could.
This law takes into account, and through your all's, again, what you all would do is suggest to the government adjustments in these loan rates.
Sure. We had a problem once. This is the most eloquent suggestion that we made. It looked like to me, and I had been up and visited the growers and where they were chicken farmers and everything mm-hmm. else, you know.
Yes, sir.
They'd get the high price They would, in chicken business, they put all of their manure from the chicken business back on the land.
Yes, sir.
And I got wind of that and what they were doing up there, and I, Jack Hoban was up there, and he was our friend. And he was a typical bureaucrat and all that sort of thing, but he would whisper to us, do this and do that.
Yes, sir.
And we did it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I discovered, much to my amazement, that the non-state growers of burley tobacco were siphoning out of what amounted to our poundage.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
And I suggested to Jim, to Hoban, what to do.
Yes, sir.
And I said, base it entirely upon what they do statewide. Don't come over and you're impoverishing Kentucky growers.
Yeah.
Whereas you don't have to do it. And he bought my suggestion, and from that time on.
That did happen for a while, though, I think.
Sure. Yeah.
And so that, due to your suggestions, that kind of, it protected our acreage or poundage or production.
We wanted to continue in the tobacco business. Mm-hmm. And the only way to keep those fellows from stealing our tobacco poundage. Mm-hmm. Well, they would, the way to do it was to block them as they undertake to leave their state and pick up. But with their historic production, they would be limited to that.
Mm-hmm. What was on that piece of property, essentially.
Yes, that's right.
I was talking about the change of the farmer. In the lifestyles, how farmers were able to live and make a living. I guess from what research I can do, farming before the tobacco is a, for most of these farmers, is a guaranteed income every year, and they can build their homes and borrow against it. And this was something that was not possible for the 15 years prior.
There was no supervisor sitting up here in the high seat, catbird seat, watching how people were being treated by the operation of these programs.
And that's what the co-op essentially is doing now, or has done over the years.
That's what we've never had an ambition. We couldn't decline to receive anybody's tobacco. We had to take it under the contract. I want to show you.
Okay.
This is cabinet. It represents my
time with the
Burley Association.
Gee.
In other words,
lots of battles and lots of.
That's right. There they are.
Lots of work.
Let me promise to send you.
Okay, that'll be fine. I'll give you my address when you get done.
Yes.
And you can send me one of those contracts. We were talking about how you have to take everybody's tobacco, and that means sometimes it might not be as well produced or as nice, but you process that and store it.
That would depend upon the grade that would be assigned.
I see.
In other words, we had grade experts.
Yes, sir.
Who inspected the tobacco and labeled it. Mm-hmm. B3F or C3F or C2F and so on.
Yes, sir.
And that, in turn, represented money. Mm-hmm. that we would advance to the grower.
Yes, sir.
Not to flood the market, mm-hmm. but to protect the individual. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's anything against a cooperative effort, this kind that we've had since 1940.
Mm-hmm. Right. What about your relationship with the people that will eventually buy the tobacco, the companies? Has that always been a pretty good relationship?
Yes, we of course didn't fall for the idea of antagonism.
Sure.
We've tried to cultivate them and all, mm-hmm. but for example, Stuart Leed mm-hmm. was at a quota meeting in Lexington several years ago, mm-hmm. and he got up and described our holdings. Mm-hmm. And I answered him. I said, yes, it's true that they're all left shoe tobacco, as he had, that was his analogy.
His expression. Uh-huh.
And I said, I can tell you, I know what they've done in buying left shoe tobacco. They've gone to Brazil.
That's right.
And they've brought in hundreds of thousands of pounds of tobacco, but anyway, it was a running contest, mm-hmm. no question about it, and we had to have advice of the foremost people in the business. Mm-hmm. There's a whole lot more to a floor of tobacco mm-hmm. that is represented by the cry of the auctioneer,
yes,
and so on. Mm-hmm. He's they're all buying against supply.
That's right.
Uh-huh. And yeah. we studied the supply situation and made our recommendations. And they usually took our recommendations.
Yeah. Now you're talking about there the Department of Agriculture. You would, depending on how much tobacco you'd have in stock, you'd say, well, maybe the quota ought to be frozen, or maybe we ought to increase 5%, or.
Yes, that's right. Well, you have not only the tobacco on hand in the custody of the association, mm-hmm. but you have the total world supply.
Yes, sir. You're right.
That you have got to acquaint yourself with mm-hmm. in order to relate it, mm-hmm. and its effect mm-hmm. on what you're offering for sale.
Yeah. How did the co-op over the years get that information? Did they talk to people at UK or
there were
government?
Publications.
Uh-huh.
Sorry.
Okay. Oh, I see.
Tobacco situation and
An outlook. Yeah, so you have to stay abreast, and as you said, do your homework.
We did our homework, and we never did make a recommendation that we ever abandoned. Mm-hmm.
Things, let me take you through a couple of these decades. I guess things in the 40s and 50s went along fairly well. Of course, you had to make those adjustments, like making sure that the tobacco production didn't leave the state.
Well, of course, an era of ascending prices. Mm-hmm. You don't have the problems that you have when they're declining.
Sure.
And that's the reason I advocated the revision of the loan rate.
Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying. In other words, during the 40s and 50s, there weren't too many problems because the price was going up and everybody was happy.
That's right.
But what you're saying is all it took was to reduce those prices to let supply get in jive with the way things were supposed to be, and it would have been all right.
It would have been all right.
People just didn't want to bite that hard bullet, I guess.
They didn't want. Well, but you have to view the thing, the good of everybody.
Yes, sir.
Rather than the good for yourself.
I understand. Right.
They've said everything about me, and it's all right. But, for example, Jimmy Sharp and his brother and some others called me one day in the hallway of the Burley Association, mm-hmm. and they plied me with questions.
Yes.
And I fortunately was able to answer them. Mm-hmm. And they left satisfied.
Advanced. There were some adjustments made in the, I'm not sure the exact year, but we went from a from an acreage system to a poundage system.
That's right.
Was that at your all's suggestion?
Well, we advocated poundage production control always.
I see.
Not in the beginning, but and they would take a man's production and put the bridle on these Indiana and Ohio and Missouri people to restrain them. In other words, they, by their production rights, which they had acquired under the old concept back when it first started, acreage allotments as against poundage quotas, it was a self-defeating thing.
Because they would just try to increase production on acres of hay.
That's right.
And you did say that that was a recommendation of the co-op. And
oh, yes, we insisted upon that.
Eventually they came around.
Yes.
There was, I guess in the 70s, there were some short crop years. Tell me about, I've heard all different kinds of things, obviously, but companies started doing a lot of overseas business or started importing more. Was there something that the American farmer or the co-op or someone could have done and should have done at that time to protect the American farmer, American tobacco farmer here?
Yes, revision of his loan rate. In other words, by indulging him, you indulged him out of business.
I see. You're saying that was mostly political because people didn't want to reduce the rate?
I can recall instance after instance.
Yes, sir.
Where the warehouse people would be represented by an adroit and capable leadership.
Yes, sir.
Albert Clay, for example. And Albert and I are just like that. But
yes,
we don't agree like that.
Of course, those warehousemen, the more production they have, the more the better profits for them.
Well, sure. It's a case of 5 or 6 million pounds as against for his the average warehouse.
So the co-op had to take the brunt of it in a way. They were taking all this excess tobacco.
Yes, sir. And at a terrifically high price.
Yes, sir.
Because parity rights had improved and increased.
And
we had a lot of tobacco that, for example, in 1980 that had come into our possession by the normal operation.
Right.
And that was costing us too much, which with the price.
I see.
Of
so that you're saying that drove a lot some of these tobacco businesses or tobacco companies to the overseas market, the high price here.
That has its influence, of course.
Yes, sir.
But I don't think it's the sole the cause of their going abroad. The dollars and cents.
Yes, sir.
Is what they're influenced by, and I've said everything on earth about them, but laughed when I did it, because I know their operation.
I see. Now they should, of course, Farm Bureau type people say that we should regulate the import of tobacco.
That's not necessary.
I see.
Lower the price of your product, and you'll stay in business.
You think that, from your experience, that our farmers produce a product that even if it cost a little more, could compete in the world market.
Yes, I do.
Okay. Tell me about these last, I'm sure these last 5 years have been as trying as any that you've...
Well, because of the high price of the loan rate, the high loan rate, we picked up tobacco.
Yes, sir.
That we normally wouldn't have come to us.
Right.
We took this exactly the same position that we were a buyer in the market.
Yes, sir.
And we should conduct ourselves accordingly.
That's historically is what you're saying. That's the way you practiced.
The way we priced it. Mm-hmm. And when it got up to where the price that we had to get for our tobacco was inordinately high, then that's the time to trim your sails.
Right, right. You were getting outside your own kind of definition that, you know, you were buying tobacco that you, that buyers weren't interested in or wouldn't have bought. At the price, right. I understand what you're saying, at the price.
That's what I'm saying. And the attack on the system was to go to the price.
Yes.
Lower the price, the loan rate.
Did we wait too long on that then, to do that?
I think we did, yes. Mm-hmm.
This is the auction warehouse contract.
We had with the warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
That is, it's as modified from time to time.
Yes, sir. But this is essentially the basic.
You can see how much it's involved.
Oh, wow, yeah. Well, you're talking about millions of pounds of tobacco and millions of dollars. The legal work, I'm sure, gets very... very involved at times.
Well, it does.
Mm-hmm.
And we've learned the crooks and everything else.
I'm sure that's true.
The damn crooks. And they're plentiful in the tobacco business.
I had mentioned that maybe we had waited too long. You mentioned before that Mr. Forgy had been brought in because of the Republican politics. We have a Republican administration.
Yes.
To try to protect the system. I've talked to other people, and it'll be on other tapes, concerning what our system is now. We've let the manufacturers have more of a say into the...
Yes, tremendous amount.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not right.
Yeah, I just want your impressions, your feelings
about
that. Well,
my opinion is that they can say we're going to buy so much tobacco.
Yes, sir.
And you'll take that into account in setting your quota.
Mm-hmm.
All of them.
Yes, sir.
Now, that may, there's no requirement that they do
carry that, through on that.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. The other part of the program that changed is now the farmer, if there is any losses, will have to pick up those losses. How do you feel about that?
Don't have to. It's a non-recourse loan.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Non-recourse.
Mm-hmm. I see.
And that's the reason, because of our situation of our own making.
Yes, sir.
We ought to have reduced the loan rate.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And if we had, we'd have been going right on now.
Mm-hmm. In other words, if we just made those little adjustments a little earlier, as were proposed.
That's right.
Uh-huh. We'd have been in better shape.
I don't think there's any question about it. They got into this damn thing that's circuitous.
Mm-hmm.
if you just lower the loan rate, as you had perfect right to do.
Yes, sir. Uh-huh. Yeah, that was already in the legislation and everything.
That's right.
Wasn't anything new that had to happen.
And we could have gone up there and said B3F, it's your loan rate now is out of the question.
Mm-hmm.
Reduce it by $10.
I see.
I wrote Joe McDaniel's testimony
mm-hmm.
that he delivered each time
yes,
for
sir.
The committee.
You're talking about the committee in Congress that
yes,
deals with this.
And mm-hmm. We proposed in one of his suggestions for a remedy
mm-hmm.
that we lower the loan rate. But that just got this damn fellow Huddleston, and he was running for re-election, and I hope he learned. But
he didn't want to take any chances that farmers would say it was his fault if they lowered the loan rate.
No.
But at the same time, this program is so important to farmers that ultimately it would have.
That's lower the loan rate.
Mm-hmm.
And then as the worm turns, depending
yeah.
upon the supply.
Mm-hmm. It could very conceivably go back up again.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What about the future? What do you see it as holding?
I think it's very dim.
I see. You don't think this present tinkering with the program is going to carry it through?
Well, it may for a while.
Short term. Uh-huh.
And then when they get out of any protection, the farmers will be so defeated
yes, sir.
That they won't try anything.
Mm-hmm.
But here is I could give you, and I'll try to remember to send you
okay.
my commentary.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, here's...